You're at the right. Hello, good morning, and welcome. This is the Biz News Briefing. I'm Alec Hogg. Today we have two very special guests who are joining us in studio, Piet Viljoen and Walter Eilert. Let's kick off with the latest news, and this comes from our partners at Bloomberg.
This evening, Vice President Kamala Harris sat down with her first formal interview on Fox News since she became the presidential nominee. The vice president sparred with network journalist Bret Baier on a number of topics such as immigration, former President Trump, and the overall mood in the U.S. Here's Harris on immigration.
I think we've had a broken immigration system transcending, by the way, Donald Trump's administration even before. Let's all be honest about that. I have no pride in saying that this is a perfect immigration system. I've been clear, I think we all are, that it needs to be fixed.
Harris said her presidency will be different than Biden's.
My presidency will not be a continuation of Joe Biden's presidency. And like every new president that comes in to office, I will bring my life experiences, my professional experiences, and fresh and new ideas.
That's Vice President Kamala Harris speaking earlier on Fox News Special Report with Bret Baier. The CEO of ASML, Christophe Houque, is expecting the market for semiconductors to slowly rebound and continue into next year. The Dutch chipmaking company reported a miss on expected bookings in the Tuesday session, levels that were about half of what the street was looking for. And at the same time, ASML lowered guidance for 2025. Here is Fouquet commenting on those results.
We continue to view AI as a key driver of the industry recovery with potential upside. We see other segments recovering more slowly than anticipated. The recovery will extend well into 2025. Which is leading to customer cautiousness and some pushouts in their investments.
So Kamala Harris making her first appearance on Fox News, which is kind of the enemy for the Democrats, and ASML, which dropped another 6.5% overnight after 16% the day before when results came out. Piet Viljoen joins us now. Piet, it's like crazy stuff, isn't it, to see the valuation of a company drop over 20% just because of one set of quarterly numbers. I suppose it tells us that it must have been hectically overvalued.
Well, one can argue about the valuation was over or undervalued. I think what it points to is that there is a lot of speculative money involved, short-term orientated money involved in the markets. And that creates this sort of volatility, which is very much out of line with the underlying fundamentals of the business. You know, the business, you know, ASML or any of these other chip makers or AI-related businesses, their values haven't changed. The values don't change by 20% overnight, but the prices do, market prices do. And that's just an indication of the high level of speculative activity in the market. You know, the valuation levels per se, that's something one can argue about.
So what does that say to a veteran who's been watching markets for decades, someone like yourself?
It says you have to be careful. You know, in markets where there is a high level of speculation, it generally tends to be positively correlated with high valuations. Sometimes those valuations might be justified and sometimes not. So I think one has to be cautious, and you have to do your work to decide for yourself whether you think these assets, these group of assets associated with AI, are overvalued or not. But it does, you know, it holds up a big red flag saying, be careful here, do your work, and get conviction in your work.
We're going to hear from Zach Calisto in a little while, and I'm looking forward to your comments on that one. But the other clip that we had on Kamala Harris. So she had her first interview with Fox News. She sounded a little bit cautious to begin with, a little bit on her back foot. And I suppose you would expect that. But the betting markets, and again, Druckenberger last night said that the market is pricing in a Trump victory. R.W. Johnson, our favorite columnist at BizNews, is saying the same thing. He reckons that all the data is pointing to Trump winning. Is this accurate from the way you're seeing it?
I tend not to spend a lot of time thinking about politics, or especially about American politics. I mean, the way I see it is that if 340 million people, if the best they can come up with is Trump and Kamala Harris, then it's not something I want to be thinking about too much.
Oh, goodness me. Well, I suppose not exactly a ringing endorsement. Coming back home, though, there were a couple of really big stories on BizNews overnight. The first of them is a company called Banxo. Pitt, I don't know if you've been following this story, but many months ago, actually, there were a flood of deep fake adverts featuring Elon Musk, Johann Rupert, Nikki Oppenheim. You remember that? And people,
I remember that. Yeah.
People threw money at it and lost a heck of a lot of money. We had our Chris Stain looking into it. And I'd like to play this clip from Chris, which brings the latest development in the story and get some insight from you.
The Financial Sector Conduct Authority, the FSCA, has provisionally withdrawn the license of Banxo. On top of that, the Financial Intelligence Center has placed a hold on 7 Banxo bank accounts. And on top of that, the National Director of Public Prosecution successfully applied for a preservation order of the funds in those bank accounts.
Sounds pretty hectic. What does Banxo say about it?
Well, Banxo vehemently denies all allegations of financial misappropriation and all the maladministration of client accounts, as well as any and all allegations in respect of deepfake advertisements and any impropriety related thereto.
So there we go. I'll tell you a little bit of background to this story. After we started running it with advocate Petra van Niekerk, because she was one of the people who was taken for a ride and lost quite a lot of money. In fact, they after our stories, they reimbursed her, but that's another story, I guess. I got some feedback from some fairly influential people saying, hey, no, the Banxo guys are good. They're reputable. This chap's a director and so on. Have you got any insights or anything that would counter that?
I have no insight. I don't know the people involved. I know that there was these deepfake adverts and their promises of high returns and that sort of thing. So the only comment I would have on something like Banxo is that that's just a reflection of human nature. People are attracted to easy money, and it just repeats itself time and time again. And you can put these guys in jail and those guys in jail, but somebody new is going to come up and promise people easy money, and they will throw money at those people. And that's just a fact of human nature. And I think that's markets are a reflection of human nature. And I think if you want to be successful in markets, you need to understand human nature probably more than you need to understand accounting.
That's interesting. Just elaborate a little bit on that.
I think Buffett said that markets are, in the short term, they are a voting machine. In other words, they reflect popular opinion. But in the long term, they're a weighing machine. So I think as an investor, you need to move beyond the voting machine process or the popularity process and move towards the weighing process. And that means in the short term, you're going to look like you're out of sync and out of touch and not in line with public opinion and popular opinion. But in the long term, you will get the returns that are generated by the investments you make as the market weighs those cash flows and so on that come out of the business. So what these sort of people like Banxo prey on is the human nature of wanting in the short term to make easy money. And in the markets, it doesn't work that way. If you do what's popular in the markets over the short term, you're probably guaranteed to lose money on the long term as the market weighs actually what's happening instead of voting for what's popular.
Our second story on a similar theme is Asime Nyede, one of our reporters, who went along to court yesterday on the BHI Ponzi scheme. Now, again, I'm not sure if you're aware of this one, but the latest development, just for those who don't know what happened there, there was a guy called Warrener who was a Saints old boy in Johannesburg. He was, I think, the chairman of the Old Boys Association at one point. He pulled in hundreds of millions of rands from people who were looking to make a quick return, well, in their inverted commas, a steady return, which was higher than what the banks were paying. He called it BHI, Berkshire Hathaway Investments, believe it or not. And on top of all of that, well, the money's gone. He handed himself in and he's in jail. But now the facilitator of all of this is a fellow called Michael Haldane and Local and Global. And he was in court yesterday and he was given the right, Asimi reports, to fly to Japan in November. He's got a Japanese wife. Apparently he has a family member who's ill. This sounds really weird. And if I was an investor in BHI, I wouldn't be terribly happy about that.
No, probably not. But I don't think there are any investors in BHI. There are lots of speculators in BHI, but there's no investors in BHI.
Okay. Well, that kind of puts it into perspective, doesn't it?
So, I just think all these things have one thing at the root of the problem, and that is a human nature of wanting to make money in a short period of time. And the bottom line is, you know, for the listeners, if you're thinking about making an investment and the returns sound too good to be true, they probably are not true.
Too good to be true. They certainly are not true. Thanks, Pitt. Do you follow Karoo, the South African company that owns CarTrack and is listed on NASDAQ?
I do, and I actually met with Zach a couple of months ago, a very impressive guy.
So let's have a little clip. I spoke to him yesterday. This was after he had done his presentation to the American investors on NASDAQ. It's an interesting interview. We've got it on Biz News Radio. But let's just listen to this little clip where we'll get some insight from Pitt in a moment. Apologies, here's the right clip.
You know, Alec, I always see our business here, and this is can be quite frustrating to me as a startup. The opportunities are immense. It's just us not being able to grow fast enough, and that's my frustration. And that is growing our ability in terms of distribution and our platform. We're continuously enhancing, improving our platform, but as we do this, we just find we're getting closer and closer to our customers, and we just discover how many challenges and problems customers really have. And, you know, it really feels like a never-ending game.
Artificial intelligence helping?
Artificial intelligence is just a buzzword. You know, what you normally find with these investment bankers, they get bored. So every 2 or 3 years, they'll come out with some, you know, word that everybody sort of grabs onto it. But I think artificial intelligence, in my mind, is really about having data, having the machines to process the data, and having the algorithms. And the data can be in many forms. It can be in numbers, it can be in words, and it can even be in video.
Isn't that interesting? I think he's probably a kindred spirit to you, Mr. Fillion.
Yeah, I like Zach. I think he's a good guy. He's a true entrepreneur, and he's built a proper business over the years, and for that you have to take your hat off to him.
And listing on NASDAQ, he was saying in that interview that he now sees 10 times as much trade in the Karoo shares through the Americans than they do on the JSE. Maybe there would be other JSE-listed stocks who'd be looking at doing something similar.
Look, I think from a trading and turnover and liquidity point of view, it makes a lot of sense. The South African market, I've made this point many times, most South Africans have taken their money offshore. They don't invest in South Africa for many reasons, some of them even valid, very few of them, but there are some valid reasons. Most of them are not valid. They've taken their money offshore. Alternatively, they've invested with one of the large fund managers who effectively invest in the index in the top 20 stocks because they're so big they can't do anything else. And those stocks are basically just a grouping of arbitrarily listed offshore companies in South Africa like BHP, Richemont, and so on and so forth. So there is very little money flowing into South African companies on the JSE. The money's offshore, or it's with the big fund managers in the index, effectively. And so to access a wider pool of investors, you have to go to places like NASDAQ, possibly London, and so on and so forth. So I think it does make sense from that point of view. If you want your stock to have a higher profile, higher turnover, then I think that's what you need to do.
In the last 5 days, Karoo is up by just under 3%. Yesterday, it dropped a little. This is in South African rands, but year-to-date, up 54%. So it's been a success story, certainly this far. And talking to him as well, Pete, I got the feeling that this is a genuine tech, maybe even an exponential tech company based in South Africa, growing at almost 20% year on year. And he sees it, as he said in that clip, as a startup. So they reckon they can keep growing at that kind of a level. Is it a stock that you would look at, or is it too expensive from a value investor's perspective?
It is a stock we are looking at. Let's just put it that way.
Pete Viljoen is with ReCM, and it's always a pleasure to be talking to Pete, but specifically so on the Biz News Briefing, which, as you well know, because you're with us, is broadcast live every morning at 7 a.m. Well, one of these stocks that we never spoke about with Pete is Quilter, because we're going to hold that one for our second guest, Walter Ehlert, who will be joining us in just a moment. But yesterday, I had the opportunity to chat with Quilter's Chief Financial Officer, Mark Satchell, and I'm going to play that for you in a moment. Just a bit of background. The name Quilter comes from a company that had evolved into a business that Old Mutual bought in the teens. It was, if you recall, Old Mutual did some very aggressive global expansion. It, in fact, took its primary listing to London, bought a whole lot of businesses in Europe and in the United States. It also had a big chunk of Nedbank. And in 2016, it realized this wasn't a good strategy and it unbundled them all. Well, the one that it unbundled in the UK, Old Mutual Wealth Managers, has become Quilter. It took its name from one of the old British companies that was part of the group. And yesterday, Quilter produced a trading statement for the third quarter to end September, which shows that this business is really on the right track. The market loved it. Share price up 6.5%. Here's the CFO, Mark Satchell.
Group or parent, when we were still part of that, was a very supportive parent of us. They provided capital for acquisitions that we made, et cetera, et cetera. But I think when you are a UK-based company, and particularly when it comes to incentive arrangements and things like that, you know, at that stage, you know, any kind of, and our employees participate in this on quite a broad range, anything that's so dominated by the performance of a life company in a foreign jurisdiction as the share price was, I think does just naturally add to impetus and attitude and really sort of maybe sort of feeling more in control. It's a much smaller business. Quilter's a much smaller business than the whole Old Mutual group was. So you sort of, I think there is sort of a greater alignment of feeling that you've got sort of control over your own destiny a whole lot. You know, we don't, certainly when it comes to those sort of things, you don't suffer vagaries of exchange rate movements and, you know, or, you know, those sort of aspects. But I think it's, you know, working in a business this size, it makes it the opportunity for people to feel like the impact that they actually making or their team is making every day is far more tangible than what it is in part of a big group. And that, I think, applies to any company. It's not specific to our particular situation. So, you know, I think that has helped. There's always been a lot of pride in working for the business. And I mean, there was pride in working for Old Mutual, and I think that's sort of retained or slightly enhanced when you are a smaller business listed in your own right. So, you know, I think there certainly are probably some beneficial aspects of that. But as I said, you know, working as part of Old Mutual, you know, we found them very supportive as a parent too.
But your lived experience means, no doubt, that you're going to be watching Anglo-American with its unbundling pretty closely.
Yes, we'll keep an eye on these things. They expect, yeah, it's sort of interesting how the clock goes round with various companies building up and then deciding to unbundle.
That was Quilter's Chief Financial Officer, Mark Satchell, who's South African. The CEO is also South African. So it's a, well, they're flying the flag over there. But what I found very impressive as we welcome Walter Aylett, who knows all about the asset management business, is that they have posted inflows which have grown quite dramatically over the past three quarters, about £800 million, £900 million, £1.5 billion in the most recent quarter. And 91, which is a company that many people in South Africa know because Quilter operates overseas and 91 operates here, has actually been going backwards. Whereas it's been either pedestrian or, if you take the rand into account, actually losing. So it's had net outflows. So it is interesting to see, to make this direct comparison, because they both operate in London. They're about the same size, not much difference. Not many people in South Africa have known about Quilter. Those who have and who bought the shares at the beginning of the year would be delighted. It's up 40%. Walter, you know about Quilter. You know all about Old Mutual and, I suppose, unleashing of energy with the unbundling that happened in 2016. And these guys seem to be hitting their straps now.
Yes, indeed. And you know, I'm kicking myself because I visited them twice in London, and our analyst, Ryan Dean, was pounding the table on them. I think we were fortunate in a similar vein. We bought St. James, which we think is a slightly different model to Quilter. And they both hope St. James' results will come out on Thursday, or today, I think, I hope, and give us an update, and be interested to see what they come up with. But on Quilter, I mean, it's pleasing to see them come back like that. I'm not too sure if the 91 comparison is fair. I think 91 is more of a play on not only the markets, but fixed interest is a slightly different business. But their real key for 91 will be the emerging market inflows that they'll be able to gather. And we weren't that surprised in a negative fashion, those 91 numbers. But it's a credit to Quilter, and we had to choose one. We chose St. James. So we'll see who's right.
See, that's why we talk to experts, because from the outside, they both reported their assets under management on the same day, and the one didn't. We asked to speak to 91, and they said, no, they don't discuss it. Whereas Quilter said, with pleasure. And Quilter had a chance to tell us how good they were. I'm sure 91 would have put it in more perspective there. But Walter, last time we spoke, you were hot on We Buy Cars. Eish, man. I'm sorry that we didn't wake a few weeks and put it in the business portfolio. It's just, it's almost like, you know, the world's listening to you, man. It's gone very well.
I'm not quite sure what's driving that, other than perhaps we've all been too conservative on the numbers, and it's building up quite a moat there. And I don't know, it feels a bit strong. But someone wants it, and yeah, it's pleasing to see. Yeah, I'm not too sure. Maybe I think there's a lot of optimism around South Africa. Perhaps a little bit too early. I think it'll take time for this canoe to, you know, the confidence that's created in consumers to come through. And it's still tough out there.
We Buy Cars is up 16% this month. It was up nearly 4% yesterday. $33.75 is the current share price. The BizNews tribe will be looking at this because you did recommend some a week or so ago that it was one of your core holdings. However, you bought in a lot lower than the current price. So when you look at it here as an active fund manager, do you start getting a little bit enticed by taking profits?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think the danger is that you pull the roses out and you leave the weeds in your portfolio. And I think if you're a long-term investor, like we are, we think the long-term prospects for a company is very good, the only time to sell it is when you've got something else to buy and you don't have the cash. And I don't think that's the situation at the moment. Our funds have quite a lot of cash. And we do think we buy cars could surprise if we're too conservative on numbers. But it is looks full to me. But I don't like buying and selling. I mean, we roughly only sell 10% of our funds a year, which means that the portfolio only turns over every 10 years, 100%. So why sell a good company?
So it presumably takes you a heck of a long time to make a decision if you are only turning over 10% a year.
Well, the facts change. You'll move fast, you know, on an asset. But if you look at what happened during COVID, we turned a lot more in that year because there was just so much happening and so much value popping out. There were companies that we wanted to buy that we couldn't buy for many, many years, and suddenly they were there offering us value. And we fortunately had the cash to invest, and that's when you will turn up your portfolio. It's a very difficult question, though. You know, Transaction Capital, which did own We Buy Cars, we should have sold at 45, 50 rand, and we didn't. And there was a mistake in hindsight. And all we did was give back all the profits that we had made on Transaction Capital. Fortunately for us, it gave us an in into We Buy Cars when it listed, and we were able to follow our rights and buy more shares, which in a way gave us back quite a lot of money.
So are you, would you say you're kind of breaking even yet on that?
Well, it all depends. We paid 475 for TC before, and it all went to 50. So I don't think we lost money. We just gave back some profits.
Okay. So look after the roses, and if they start getting choked by weeds, then move on them.
Yeah, and also, I think you've got to start with a blank piece of paper every now and then and ask yourself, would you buy We Buy Cars at this price? And you probably would, but probably not at the weighting that we're in at the moment. You know, you probably put 2% instead of 4%. It's difficult, you know, and you sell it and then you'll never get it back as well. So it's that old age problem in South Africa, liquidity.
Well, one of the stocks that we sold out of the BizNews portfolio is Netflix. And at the time, it looked like it was a very smart call. However, Netflix is, after going down, has gone up and up. And up. I think we saw it go all the way down to under $200, $175. Right. It's now $700. And the results are coming out tonight, obviously in US, tonight our time and in the US. Is this one of the companies that you do keep an eye on?
Not as much as we should have. That was one company that we regret not buying because we, like you, we saw it get to those lows. I like the model, and I think it's quite a difficult model to take on. But things move so fast in that world that as you're doing the work, it just goes away from you. And I think our big problem is that we are finding a lot of value in the unloved stocks, you know, the very plain, boring, single PE stocks. And we weren't changing growth. I think we were changing more certainty. I think that's the bit. And you pay a price for certainty in the sense that, you know, it takes a while to catch up on Netflix. And our big concern is the cost of money going up in the next 10 years, which I think is still there. I don't think anything's changed. But Netflix is, I think, one of those super tech stocks or those top 8 or 9 fangs or what they call them now, the sexy eight or something, which I thought did have was busy building quite a moat around it. But, yeah, it was too rich for us anyway.
And the local player in that area, MultiChoice, it's been all over the place where, funnily enough, looking back over 5 years, you've made nothing. It's certainly been bouncing around but hasn't done anything in the last 5 years. Now there is a potential deal from the Canal Plus in France. And I do recall that Alan Gray were very excited about MultiChoice when it was unbundled from Naspers. But I guess that was on a valuation play, given that it's moving so fast. Your thoughts?
No. Long, long time ago, that part of the market we felt we didn't want to be in. And we just saw lots of competition for eyeballs with other mediums. So we weren't going to go there. And I think we did have concerns about the way the business was being run, and it just didn't feel like one to get into. And I'm glad we didn't.
Well, one that many traders have been getting into, and are perhaps not so glad they did, is ArcelorMittal. Now, this has relevance because in the United States right now, there is a Donald Trump probable presidency, if we believe what the markets and the betting markets and the market itself says, who says that he will block a proposed acquisition by a Japanese company of an American steel company. So then we look at South Africa's steel company, and that has been rushing up from 101 rand 20. It got over 2 rand, and now it's back to 138, all in the in a couple of weeks, literally. Well, since the beginning of September. You don't play that.
No, so from the time we started Aid & Co, we had like what I call an in-tray and out-tray and a too-tough-tray approach to these investments. And Arcelor was one of those companies that we felt was just so difficult to operate. So we took a decision never to look at it. And I think if you were the steward of this country's economy and you had carte blanche, we have no business having a steel company in our country. It's just, we can import the steel. There's the days of certain industries that they were strategic that you had to own. I don't think, I think the game has changed. And I don't see, unless it's a niche player of some sort, but I don't see why we need a steel player here. It's a very tough business, very hard.
Well, the share price was down 15% yesterday, and I guess there are quite a few people who got burnt on that recent run. Walter, just from a broader perspective, we have spoken in the past about the Government of National Unity, which does seem to be moving in the right direction. We had a interview this week with Derek Matthews, who's the chairman of Grain SA, and he's on the board of Agri SA, and he says that John Steenhuisen, although he seems to have been attracting a lot of negative media, is doing a great job in agriculture. So that's another little tick on the GNU. How are you reading it now? And I think more particularly, what's your sense of the way that local companies and international potential investors are reading it?
Look, I think it's too early to tell in politics. You know, we have this habit of shooting ourselves in the foot when things are going really well. I think we're all quite surprised so far how well it's gone, and may it continue. And every night we go to bed and say our prayers, hoping the next morning there'll be no bad news. That said, there is evidence of it working. I don't know if you've landed at an airport recently at International, and there's something happening at Home Affairs that's working really well. And there's a lot of attention where, particularly where the DA portfolios are being run, we get the feeling something's happening. And I think that's a positive. There's a lot of interest by foreigners, consumer foreigners. If you look at the property markets, I think in Cape Town, not that it's a big proxy for the rest of the country, that's a positive. But overall, I think we mustn't get too ahead of ourselves, because the evidence out there is that it takes time for this economy to pick up. You know, in terms of confidence, we still need a few interest rate cuts to work through the system. The injection by the two-pot retirement system will help a bit. But overall, I think we might have a good Christmas, I hope. But on the ground, I think it's still too early to tell.
Bernard Swanepoel, who's a gent you'd know very well from his Building of Harmony, was on the show yesterday, and he was saying from the mining in Durban, Joburg mining in Durban, he was getting some quite positive feedback. He said the mining sector's now getting a bit of a bromance, as he described it, with Gwede Montash. And I see the mining shares had a good run yesterday. I mean, of course, they're all over the place. They are cyclical. But if South Africa can get it, mining sector moving in the right direction, that surely would be a very positive point for the country as a whole.
Absolutely, and I think we're going to be tested again in the next 6 to 12 months in terms of regulation. In other words, if another mining company wants to buy or sell a company, and how the government reacts to that, a competition commission, as well as I think if I look at, I think our vice president in London was even talking privatization, and I'm not quite sure how far he wants to take it. And then even just, you know, when we had these three power ships that we were going to do a deal with, which was a terrible deal for the country, reference to Eskom, that's off. So there's just every day there's a little bit of positive news. And bromance is quite a good way of, there is something happening. I don't know how it's happened, but there is something happening. You can feel it. And it's a positive, and I think we should work on it.
Walter Eilert is with Eilert & Co. and one of South Africa's top minds in asset management, and we look forward to having him back on the BizNews Briefing, as we do look forward to having you back on the BizNews Briefing soon. Just to close off with last night on Wall Street, as far as the BizNews portfolio stocks are concerned, ASML Holdings down 6.5%. That's after a 16% decline the day before. This on quarterly results that seriously disappointed the market. NVIDIA up another 3%, so it's at $135 a share. It's up 182% since the beginning of the year. Palantir lost 1%. Reunert here in South Africa was 2.5% down. And those are the major movers of the stocks in the BizNews portfolio. Thank you for joining us. It's been my pleasure, as always. And until tomorrow, hopefully, when you join us at exactly the same time, which is 7 a.m. for our live-streamed BizNews Briefing. It's Alec Hogg signing off.